Chapter 16. An Unexpected Offer. Sunlight creeping through the window awoke Nynaeve. For a moment she lay sprawled atop the striped coverlet. Elaine lay sleeping in the other bed. The early morning was already warm, and the night had not been much better, but that was not the reason Nynaeve's shift was twisted and sweaty. Her dreams after discussing what she had seen with Elaine had not been good. In most, she had been back in the tower being dragged before the Amyrlin, who was sometimes Elida and sometimes Mogadine. In some, Rand had been lying beside the Amyrlin's writing table like a dog, collared and leashed and muzzled. The dreams about Egwene had been as bad in a way. Boiled catfern and powdered maven's leaf tasted just as bad in a dream as they did awake. Making her way to the washstand, she cleansed her face and scrubbed her teeth with salt and soda. The water was not hot, but it could not be called cool either. The sodden shift she stripped off and dug a fresh one from one of the chests, along with a hairbrush and mirror. Peering at her own image, she regretted undoing her braid for comfort. It had not helped, and now her hair hung in a tangle to her waist. Sitting down on the chest, she laboriously worked the knots out, then began giving her hair its 100 strokes. 3 scratches ran down her neck and disappeared beneath her shift. They were not as red as they might have been, thanks to an ointment of heal-all taken from the Makura woman. She had told Elaine they came from brambles. Foolish. She suspected that Elaine knew it was not true, despite her tale of looking about the tower grounds after Egwene left. But she had been too upset to think straight. She had snapped at the other woman several times, for no reason except that she was thinking about her unfair treatment by Milane and Egwene. Not that it doesn't do her good to be reminded she's not the daughter heir here. Still, it was none of the girl's fault. She would have to make it up to her. In the mirror, she saw Elaine rise and begin washing. "I still think my plan is best," the girl said, scrubbing her face. Her raven-dyed hair did not seem to have one snarl, despite her curls. "We could be in Tyr much more quickly my way." Her plan was to abandon the coach once they reached the Eldar, at some small village, where there would not likely be many white cloaks, and just as important, no eyes and ears for the tower. There they were to take a riverboat down to Ibudar, where they could find a ship for Tyr. That they had to go to Tyr was no longer in doubt. Tar Valon they would avoid at all cost. "How long before a boat stops where we are?" Nynaeve said patiently. She had thought this was all settled before they went to sleep. It had been to her mind. "You yourself said that every boat might not stop, and how long do we wait in Ibudar before we find a ship for Tyr?" Putting the brush down, she began remaking her braid. "The villagers hang out a flag if they want a boat to put in, and most will. And there are always ships for anywhere in a seaport the size of Ibudar." As if the girl had ever been in a seaport of any size before leaving the tower with Nynaeve. Elaine always thought that whatever she had not learned of the world as daughter heir of Andor, she had learned in the tower, even after plenty of proof to the contrary. And how dare she put on that forbearing tone with her? "We are not likely to find that gathering of blues on a ship, Elaine." Her own plan was to stick with the coach, cross the rest of Amadicia, then Altara and Mirandi to Far Madding in the hills of Kintara and over the plains of Maredo to Tyr. It would certainly take longer, but aside from the chance of finding that gathering somehow, coaches very rarely sank. She could swim, but she was not comfortable with land completely out of sight. Patting her face dry, Elaine changed her shift and came to help with doing the braid. Nynaeve was not fooled. She would hear about boats again. Her stomach did not like boats. Not that that had influenced her decision, of course. If she could bring Aes Sedai to Rand's aid, it would be well worth the longer travel time. "Have you recalled the name?" Elaine asked, weaving the strands of hair. "At least I remembered there was a name. Light, give me time." She was sure there had been a name. A town it would have to be, or a city. She could not have seen the name of a country and forgotten it. Drawing a long breath, she took a hold on her temper and went on in a milder tone. "I will remember it, Elaine. Just give me time." Elaine made a non-committal sound and continued braiding. After a bit, she said, "Was it really wise to send Birgitta looking for Mogadine?" Nynaeve shot the young woman a sidelong frown, but it rolled off her like water off oiled silk. As a change of subject, this was not the one she would have chosen. "Better we find her than she finds us."
"I suppose so. But what will we do when we find her?" She had no answer for that. But it was better to be the hunter than the hunted, however roughly it went. The Black Aja had taught her that.
The common room was not crowded when they went down, yet even at that early hour there was a sprinkling of pale cloaks among the patrons, mostly on older men, all with officer's rank. No doubt they preferred to eat from the inn's kitchens rather than what white cloak cooks dished up in the garrison. Nynaeve would almost rather have eaten on a tray again, but that little room was like a box. All of these men were intent on their food, the white cloaks no less than the others. Surely it was quite safe. Cooking smells filled the air. Apparently these men wanted beef or mutton even first thing in the morning. No sooner did Elaine's foot leave the last step than Mistress Jaren bustled up to offer them, or the Lady Morellin, rather, a private dining room. Nynaeve never shifted her eyes toward Elaine, but the other woman said,
"I think we will eat here. I seldom have the opportunity to eat in a common room, and I quite enjoy it, really. Have one of your girls bring us something cooling. If the day is like this already, I fear I'll swelter before we reach the next stop."
It was a constant wonder to Nynaeve that that haughty manner never got them thrown bodily into the street. She had met enough lords and ladies by now to know that nearly all behaved in that fashion, but still, she would not have put up with it for a minute. The innkeeper, though, bobbed a curtsy, smiling and dry-washing her hands, then showed them to a table near a window looking onto the street, and scurried away to do Elaine's bidding. Perhaps that was her way of getting back at the girl. They were off by themselves, well away from the men already at other tables, but anyone walking by could stare in at them, and if any of their food was hot, which she hoped it was not, they were as far from the kitchens as it was possible to be. When it came, breakfast consisted of spicy muffins, wrapped in a white cloth and still warm, and pleasant even so, yellow pears, blue grapes that looked a bit wizened, and some sort of red things that the serving girl called strawberries, though they looked like no berry that Nynaeve had ever seen. They certainly did not taste anything like straw, especially with clotted cream spooned on top. Elaine claimed to have heard of them, but then she would. With a lightly spiced wine supposedly cooled in the spring house, one sip told her that the spring was not very cool, if there was one. It made a refreshing morning meal. The nearest man was three tables away, and he wore a dark blue woolen coat, a prosperous tradesman, perhaps, but they did not talk. Plenty of time for that when they were on the road again, and could be sure that there was no danger of sharp ears. Nynaeve finished her food well before Elaine. The way the girl took her time quartering a pear, you would think they had all day to sit at table.
"I thought it was you, Elaine, but the hair put me off at first."
Nynaeve stared at Galad, Elaine's half-brother. Stared was the word, of course. Tall and steely slender, dark of hair and eye, he was the most handsome man she had ever seen. Handsome was not enough. He was gorgeous. She had seen women cluster around him in the tower, even Aes Sedai, all of them smiling like fools. She wiped the smile from her own face. But she could do nothing about her racing heart, nor make herself breathe properly. She did not feel anything for him. It was just that he was beautiful.
"Take hold of yourself, woman."
"What are you doing here?"
She was pleased that she did not sound strangled. It was not fair for a man to look like that.
"And what are you doing wearing that?"
Elaine's voice was low, but it still held a snap.
Nynaeve blinked and realized he wore a shirt of shining mail and a white cloak with two golden knots of rank beneath the flaring sun. She felt color rising in her cheeks, staring at a man's face so hard that she had not even seen what he was wearing. She wanted to hide her own face from humiliation. He smiled, and Nynaeve had to take a deep breath.
"I am here because I was one of the children recalled from the north, and I am a child of the light because it seemed the right thing to do. Elaine, when you two and Egwene vanished, it did not take long for Gawain and me to find out that you were not doing penance on a farm, whatever we were told. They had no right to involve you in their plots, Elaine. Any of you."
"You seem to have attained rank very quickly," Nynaeve said. Did the fool man not realize that talking of Aes Sedai plots here was a good way to get them both killed?
"Aemon Valda seemed to think my experience warranted it, wherever gained."
His shrug dismissed rank as unimportant. It was not modesty, precisely, but not pretense, either. The finest swordsman among those who came to study with the warders in the tower, he had also stood high in the classes on strategy and tactics, but Nynaeve could not remember him boasting about his prowess, even in jest. Accomplishments meant nothing to him, perhaps because they came so easily.
"Does Mother know of this?" Elaine demanded, still in that quiet voice. Her scowl would have frightened a wild boar, though.
Galad shifted just a hair, uneasily. "There's been no good time to write her. But do not be so sure she will disapprove, Elaine. She is not so friendly with the North as she was. I hear a ban may be made law."
"I sent her a letter, explaining."
Elaine's glare had transformed to puzzlement. "She must understand. She trained in the tower, too."
"Keep your voice down," he said, low and hard. "Remember where you are."
Elaine flushed a deep red, but whether in anger or embarrassment, Nynaeve could not say. Abruptly she realized that he had been speaking as quietly as they, and carefully, too. He had not mentioned the tower once, or Aes Sedai.
"Is Egwene with you?" he went on.
"No," she replied, and he sighed deeply.
"I had hoped."
Gawain was nearly unhinged with worry when she disappeared. "He cares for her, too. Will you tell me where she is?" Nynaeve took note of that, too. The man had become a white cloak, yet he cared for a woman who wanted to be Aes Sedai. Men were so strange, they were hardly human sometimes.
"We will not,"
Elaine said firmly, the crimson receding from her cheeks.
"Is Gawain here, too? I will not believe he has become a—"
She had the wit to lower her voice further, but she still said,
"A white cloak."
"He remains in the north, Elaine." Nynaeve supposed that he meant Tar Valon, but surely Gawain had gone from there. Surely he could not support Elida.
"You cannot know what has happened there, Elaine," he continued. "All the corruption and vileness in that place bubbled to the top as it had to. The woman who sent you away has been deposed."
He looked around and dropped his voice to a momentary whisper, despite no one being close enough to overhear.
"Stilled and executed."
Taking a deep breath, he made a disgusted sound.
"It was never a place for you, or for Egwene. I have not been long with the children, but I am certain my captain will give me leave to escort my sister home. That is where you should be, with Mother. Tell me where Egwene is, and I will see that she is brought to Camelon too. You will both be safe there."
Nynaeve's face felt numb. Stilled and executed. Not an accidental death or illness. That she had considered the possibility did not make the fact less shocking. Rand had to be the reason. If there had ever been any small hope that the tower might not oppose him, it was gone. Elaine showed no expression at all, her eyes staring at the distance.
"I see my news shocks you," he said in a low voice. "I do not know how deeply that woman meshed you in her plot, but you are free of her now. Let me see you safely to Camelon. No one need know you had any more contact with her than the other girls who went there to learn. Either of you."
Nynaeve showed him her teeth, in what she hoped looked like a smile. It was nice to be included, finally. She could have smacked him. If only he were not so good-looking.
"I will think on it," Elaine said slowly. "What you say makes sense, but you must give me time to think. I must think."
Nynaeve stared at her. It made sense. The girl was blathering.
"I can give you a little time," he said, "but I do not have much if I am to ask leave. We may be ordered..."
Suddenly there was a square-faced, black-haired white cloak, clapping Galad on the shoulder and grinning widely. Older, he wore the same two knots of rank on his cloak.
"Well, young Galad, you can't keep all the pretty women for yourself. Every girl in town sighs when you walk by, and most of their mothers as well. Introduce me."
Galad scraped back his bench to stand. "I thought I knew them when they came downstairs, Trom. But whatever charm you think I possess, it does not work on this lady. She does not like me, and I think she will not like any friend of mine. If you practice the sword with me this afternoon, perhaps you can attract one or two."
"Never with you around," Trom grumped good-naturedly. "And I'd sooner let the farrier pound my head with his hammer than practice against you."
But he let Galad start him for the door, with only a regretful look at the two women. As they left, Galad shot a glance back at the table, full of frustration and indecision. No sooner were they out of sight than Elaine stood.
"Nana, I need you upstairs."
Mistress Jaren materialized at her side, inquiring if she had enjoyed her repast, and Elaine said,
"I require my driver and footman immediately. Nana will settle the bill."
She was moving for the stairs before she finished speaking. Nynaeve stared after her, then dug out her purse and paid the woman, making assurances that everything had been to her mistress's liking, and trying not to wince at the price. Once rid of the woman, she hurried upstairs. Elaine was stuffing their things into the chests any which way, including the sweaty shifts they had hung on the ends of the beds to dry.
"Elaine, what's the matter?"
"We must leave immediately, Nynaeve, at once."
She did not look up until the last article was crammed in. "Right this minute, wherever he is, Galad is puzzling over something he may never have faced before. Two things that are right, but opposite. To his mind, it is right to tie me to a pack-horse, if necessary, and haul me to Mother, to salve her worries and save me from becoming Aes Sedai whatever I want. And it is also right to turn us in, to the White Cloaks or the army or both. That is the law in Amadicia, and White Cloak law, too. Aes Sedai are outlawed here, and so is any woman who has ever trained in the tower. Mother met Aelron once to sign a trade treaty, and they had to do it in Altara, because Mother could not legally enter Amadicia. I embraced Saidar the moment I saw him, and I won't let it go until we are far from him."
"Surely you exaggerate, Elaine. He is your brother."
"He is not my brother!"
Elaine drew a deep breath and let it out slowly.
"We had the same father," she said in a calmer voice, "but he is not my brother. I will not have him. Nynaeve, I've told you time and again, but you will not take it in. Galad does what is right. Always. He never lies. Did you hear what he said to that Trom fellow? He didn't say he did not know who we are. Every word he said was the truth. He does what is right, no matter who is hurt by it, even himself or me. He used to tell on Gawain and me for everything, and on himself, too. If he decides the wrong way, we will have White Cloaks lying in ambush for us before we reach the edge of the village."
A tap sounded at the door, and Nynaeve's breath caught in her throat. Surely Galad would not really... Elaine's face was set, ready to fight. Hesitantly, Nynaeve cracked the door. It was Tom, and Julin with that fool hat in his hand. "My lady wants us?" Tom asked, with a touch of servility for anyone who might overhear. Able to breathe again, not caring who was listening, she snatched the door the rest of the way open.
"Get in here, you two!"
She was growing tired of them looking at one another every time she spoke. Before she had the door shut again, Elaine said,
"Tom, we must leave right away."
The determined look had left her face, and anxiety filled her voice.
"Galad is here. You must remember what a monster he was as a child. Well, he is no better grown, and he is a White Cloak besides. He could..."
The words seemed to catch in her throat. She stared at Tom, mouth working soundlessly, but no more wide-eyed than he stared at her. He sat down heavily on one of the chests, never taking his eyes from Elaine's. Clearing his throat roughly, he went on.
I thought I saw him watching the inn. A white cloak. But he looked the man the boy would grow into. I suppose it shouldn't be a surprise he grew into a white cloak at that.
Nynaeve went to the window. Elaine and Tom hardly seemed to notice her passage between them. Traffic was beginning to pick up in the street, farmers and farm carts and villagers mingling with white cloaks and soldiers. Across the way, one white cloak was sitting on an upended barrel, that perfect face unmistakable. Elaine swallowed. Did he recognize you?
No. 15 years changes a man more than it does a boy. Elaine, I thought you had forgotten.
I remembered in Tanchico, Tom.
With a wavering smile, Elaine reached out and tugged one of his long mustaches. Tom smiled back almost as unsteadily. He looked as if he was contemplating a leap from the window. Julin was scratching his head, and Nynaeve wished she had some idea what they were talking about, too, but there were more important matters at hand.
We still have to leave before he brings the entire garrison down on us. With him watching, it won't be easy. I haven't seen another patron who looks like they have a coach.
Ours is the only one in the stable yard, Julin said.
Tom and Elaine were still staring at one another, plainly not hearing a word. Driving off with the curtains down was no protection then. Nynaeve was willing to bet that Galad had already learned exactly how they had come to Sienda.
Is there a back way from the stable yard?
A gate wide enough for one of us at a time, Julin said dryly. And what's on the other side is little more than an alley anyway. There aren't more than two or three streets in this village wide enough for the coach.
He studied that cylindrical hat, turning it in his hands.
I could get close enough to crack his head. If you were ready, you could drive off during the confusion. I could catch you up on the road.
Nynaeve sniffed loudly.
How? Gallop after on Skulker? Even if you didn't fall out of the saddle inside a mile, do you think that you would even reach a horse if you attacked a white cloak in that street?
Galad was still there across the street, and Trom had joined him, the pair apparently chatting idly. She leaned over and yanked Tom's nearest mustache.
Do you have anything to add? Any brilliant plans? Did all your listening to gossip yield anything that might help?
He clapped a hand to his face and gave her an offended look.
Not unless you think there's help in Aelron laying claim to some border villages in Altara. A strip the whole length of the border, from Salidar to So Ebon to Mosra. Is there any help in that, Nynaeve? Is there? Try to pull a man's mustache out of his face. Somebody ought to box your ears for once.
What would Aelron want with a strip along the border, Tom? Elaine asked.
Perhaps she was interested. She seemed interested in every fool twist and turn of politics and diplomacy. Or perhaps she was just trying to stop an argument. She used to try smoothing over things all the time before she became wrapped up in flirting with Tom.
It isn't the king, child.
His voice softened for her.
It's Pedro Nile. Aelron does what he is told, usually, though he and Nile make out that it isn't so. Most of those villages have been empty since the White Cloak War, what the children call the Troubles. Nile was the general in the field then, and I doubt he's ever given up wanting Altara. If he controls both banks of the Eldar, he can squeeze the river trade to Ebudar, and if he can crack Ebudar, the rest of Altara will trickle into his hands like grain flowing from a hole in a sack.
That is all very well, Nynaeve said firmly before he or the girl could speak again. There had been something in what he had said that tickled her memory, but she could not say what or why. In any case, they had no time for lectures on relations between Amadicia and Altara, not with Galad and Trom watching the front of the inn. She said as much, adding,
"What about you, Julin?
You consort with low types?"
The thief-catcher always sought out the cut-purses and burglars and footpads in a town. He claimed they knew more of what was really going on than any official. Are there smugglers we can bribe to sneak us out, or, you know the sort of thing we need, man?
I heard little. Thieves keep low in Amadicia, Nynaeve. First offense is branding, second is loss of your right hand, and third is hanging, whether it's the king's crown or a loaf of bread. There aren't many thieves in a town this size, not who do it for a living. He was contemptuous of amateur thieves, and for the most part they only wanted to talk about two things: whether the prophet is really coming to Amadicia the way rumor says he is, and whether the town fathers might relent and let that traveling menagerie put on a show. Sienda is too far from the borders for smugglers to— She cut him off with peremptory satisfaction. That is it. The menagerie. They all looked at her as if she'd gone mad.
Of course, Tom said, much too mildly. We can get Luca to bring the boar horses back, and make off while they destroy some more of the town. I don't know what you gave him, Nynaeve, but he threw a rock at us as we were driving off.
For once Nynaeve forgave him his sarcasm, feeble as it was, and his lack of wit to see what she saw. That's as may be, Tom Marilyn, but Master Luca wants a patron, and Elaine and I are going to be his patrons. We still have to abandon the coach and team. That smarted. She could have built a snug house in the Two Rivers for what they had cost, and sneak out that back way. Tossing open the chest with the leaf-shaped hinges, she rooted through clothes and blankets and pots and everything that she had not wanted to leave behind with the wagon full of dyes. She had made sure that the men packed everything except the harness, until she came to the gilded caskets and the purses. "Tom, you and Julin go out by that back gate and find a wagon and team of some sort. Buy some supplies and meet us on the road back to Luca's camp." Regretfully, she filled Tom's hand with gold, not even bothering to count. There was no telling what things would cost, and she did not want him wasting time bargaining.
"That is a wonderful idea," Elaine said, grinning. "Galad will be looking for two women, not a troop of animals and jugglers, and he will never think we would head for Gildan."
Nynaeve had not thought of that. She had intended making Luca head straight for Tyr. A menagerie such as he had put together with tumblers and jugglers in addition to animals could earn its way almost anywhere, she was sure. But if Galad did come looking for them, or send someone, it would be to the east, and he might be smart enough to look even in a menagerie. Men did show brains sometimes, usually when you least expected it.
"That was the first thing I thought of, Elaine."
She ignored the sudden faint taste in her mouth, the acrid memory of boiled cat fern and powdered maven's leaf. Tom and Julin protested, of course. Not the idea as such, but they seemed to think that one of them remaining behind could protect her and Elaine against Galad and any number of white cloaks. They did not seem to realize that if it came to that, channeling would do more than the pair of them and 10 more besides. They still seemed troubled, but she managed to push them both out with the stern injunction, "And don't you dare come back here. We will meet you on the road."
"If it comes to channeling," Elaine quietly said once the door was shut, "we will quickly find ourselves facing the whole White Cloak garrison, and probably the army garrison as well. The power doesn't make us invincible. All it will take is 2 arrows.
"We will worry about that when it comes," Nynaeve told her. She hoped the men had not thought of that. If they had, likely one of them would lurk about and probably rouse Galad's suspicions if he was not careful. She was ready to accept their help when it was needed. Rhonda Macura had taught her that, though having to be rescued like a kitten down a well still galled. But it would be when she thought it necessary, not they. A quick trip downstairs found Mistress Jaren. Her lady had changed her mind. She did not think she could face the heat and dust of travel again so quickly. She intended to nap, and did not want to be disturbed until a late supper that she would send down for. Here was the coin for another night's lodging. The innkeeper was very understanding of a noble lady's delicacy, and how inconstant their desires. Nynaeve thought Mistress Jaren would be understanding of anything short of murder, so long as the reckoning was paid. Leaving the plump woman, Nynaeve cornered one of the serving girls for a moment. A few silver pennies changed hands, and the girl darted off in her apron to find two of the deep bonnets that Nynaeve said looked so shady and cool. Not the sort of thing her lady would wear, of course, but they would do nicely for her. When she got back to the room, Elaine had the gilded caskets on a blanket with the dark polished box holding the recovered Turangrial and the wash-leather purse that held the seal. The fat purses of coin lay beside Nynaeve's scrip on the other bed. Folding the blanket, Elaine tied the bundle with some stout cord from one of their chests. Nynaeve had saved everything. She regretted leaving it all behind now. It was not just the expense, not only that. You never knew when something was going to come in handy. Take the two woolen dresses that Elaine had laid out on her bed. They were not fine enough for a lady, and too fine for a lady's maid, but if they had left them in Mardisen as Elaine had wanted, they would be in a fine fix for clothing now. Kneeling, Nynaeve rummaged in another chest. A few shifts, two more wool dresses for changes. The pair of cast-iron frying pans and a canvas bag were perfectly good, but too heavy, and the men would certainly not forget replacements for those. The sewing kit in its neat bone-inlaid box, they would never think to buy so much as a pin. Her mind was only partly on her selections, though. "You knew Tom before?" she asked in what she hoped was a casual tone. She watched Elaine from the corner of her eye while pretending to concentrate on rolling stockings. The girl had begun pulling out clothes of her own, sighing over the silks before putting them aside. She froze with her hands deep in one of the chests, and she did not look at Nynaeve. "He was court-barred in Camelin when I was little," she said quietly. "I see." She did not see at all. How did a man go from a court-barred entertaining royalty, the next thing to a noble, to a gleeman wandering from village to village? "He was mother's lover after father died." Elaine had gone back to choosing, and she said it so matter-of-factly that Nynaeve gaped. "Your mother's?" The other woman still was not looking at her, though. "I did not remember him until Tanchico. I was very small. It was his mustaches, and standing close enough to look up at his face, and hearing him recite part of the Great Hunt of the Horn. He thought I'd forgotten again." Her face colored slightly. "I drank too much wine, and the next day I made out that I could not remember anything." Nynaeve could only shake her head. She remembered the night the girl had filled her fool self with wine. At least she had never done that again. Her head the next morning had seemed an effective cure. Now she knew why the girl behaved as she did with Tom. She had seen the same back in the Two Rivers a few times. A girl just old enough to really think of herself as a woman. Who else would she measure herself against except her mother? And sometimes, who better to compete against to prove that she was a woman? Usually it led to no more than trying to be better at everything from cooking to sewing, or maybe some harmless flirting with her father. But in the case of one widow, Nynaeve had seen the woman's nearly grown daughter make a complete fool of herself, trying to capture the man her mother intended to marry. The trouble was, Nynaeve had no idea what to do about this silliness in Elaine. Despite severe lectures and more from her and the women's circle, Sari Ayelin had not settled down until her mother was married again, and she herself had found a husband, too. "I suppose he must have been like a second father to you," Nynaeve said carefully. She pretended to concentrate on her own packing. Tom had certainly been looking at the girl that way. It explained so much. "I hardly think of him so." Elaine appeared intent on deciding how many silk shifts to take, but her eyes saddened. "I cannot really remember my father. I was only a baby when he died. Gawain says he spent all of his time with Galad. Lini tried to make the best of it, but I know he never came to see Gawain or me in the nursery. He would have, I know, once we were old enough to teach things, like Galad, but he died." Nynaeve tried again. "At least Tom is fit for a man of his age. We'd be in a fine fix if he suffered from stiff joints. Old men often do." "He could still do backflips if not for his limp. And I don't care if he does limp. He is intelligent and knowledgeable about the world. He is gentle, and yet I feel quite safe with him. I don't think I should tell him that. He tries to protect me enough as it is.
With a sigh, Nynaeve gave up, for now at least. Tom might look on Elaine as a daughter, but if the girl kept this up, he just might remember that she was not, and then Elaine would find herself in the pickling kettle.
Tom is very fond of you, Elaine. Time to shift to some other subject. Are you sure about Galad, Elaine? Are you sure Galad could turn us in, Elaine?
The other woman gave a start, wiping a small frown from her face.
What? Galad? I'm certain, Nynaeve. And if we refuse to let him take us to Camelin, that will only make the decision for him.
Muttering to herself, Nynaeve pulled a silk riding dress out of her chest. Sometimes she thought the Creator had only made men to cause trouble for women.